The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
We have main engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston, broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
And good evening, listeners. Welcome to the Space Show, and I am your host, David Livingston. Great to be here. Thank you all for tuning in, and we have another excellent show for you tonight, and let's get it started. A couple of announcements. For those of you who will want to call and talk with our guest, Mark Whittington, the toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. Remember, there are no call screeners, so let the phone ring. And we'll bring you up on air and answer that just as quickly as we possibly can. And remember, no call screeners, so just hang on and be patient. Email drspace@thespaceshow.com, and that should work just fine. Do remember also to go to our website, that is thespaceshow.com. A lot of interesting things there. There's a website newsletter that is uploaded fresh every Sunday afternoon. And when you check out the newsletter, be sure to scroll on down because it shows the coming events. And right now we're booking through the balance of 2016. Hard to imagine that the year is just around the corner for a close. Unbelievable. Also, there's a menu up at the top, and you'll see lots of interesting things there. So the support menu is where you can buy Space Show T-shirts and coffee mugs and things of that nature. And, again, it's under the support menu. Listen Live are the instructions for how to listen to a Space Show program on the Internet. So if you want to tell your friends about it or share the information, that's where those instructions are. So do check it out. And there's other things as well. On the far right, upcoming menu, upcoming shows. As soon as the show appears there, you can start posting comments on the blog, because that is our blog, and those comments will come directly to me as well as getting posted. So if you do that before or during a show, I will have those comments or questions, and I can ask them of our guests just the same as if you were sending emails to us. So again, that's over on the upcoming show menu, and that's on the far right side. And then scroll down a little bit toward the bottom, and you'll see upcoming shows. If you keep scrolling down on the right side, you'll see listener voices, and you might want to hear what some of the Space Show listeners have on their mind, and check it out. And for those of you who took that app, that perk on our Indiegogo plan, which was a year ago, your time is running out on that. Remember, these perks were for a year, and many of you have never done it. And yet you paid for it. So whether you want to do it or not, it's there waiting for you. So do get a hold of us. And email for that is drspace@thespaceshow.com. So do remember we're copyrighted and trademarked, and you can download and our shows and share them with people. Simple rules are don't do anything commercial with the program and don't edit them and then put edits up on YouTube or any other thing, and then also written transcripts are not permitted, even if they're for your own personal use. Do read our full copyright statement at the bottom of all of our website pages, including OneGiantLeapFoundation.org, and we appreciate your paying attention to these simple rules. And then do remember we're a 501c3 nonprofit with OneGiantLeapFoundation.org, and we're able to bring you these shows because many of you do financially contribute to the Space Show. And your contributions keep us on the air. Remember, if you're a federal U.S. taxpayer, you do get a tax deduction for your gift. And the same is true if you're paying California taxes. There's a PayPal button on our homepage, and it's also on OneGiantLeapFoundation.org's page. And that's the way most people donate to us. But there's also mailing instructions. If you don't want to do something electronically and you want to send a check, please make the check payable to OneGiantLeapFoundation.org. And then you may be an habitual Amazon purchaser, as am I. And Amazon has two terrific ways that people can support nonprofits. And you'll see a big Amazon button in the middle of our homepage. Click on it, and it will explain both of those programs that you can use if you like to buy things from Amazon. And it does mount up. So Amazon's got a very good program in play, and we appreciate their support. We do have sponsors, and you'll see their banner ads running across our homepage. But tonight, the first segment of our program is brought to you by Orbital ATK. They're a global leader in aerospace and defense technology and the partner you can count on for advanced, reliable space propulsion systems for space exploration, commercial ventures, and defense programs. And also the Integrated Space Analytics Company in Florida. They have the Integrated Space Plan, which is a highly detailed development chart showing the path to becoming a spacefaring race. See how technologies and destinations build upon one another. Explore hundreds of individual elements in more detail at thespaceplan.com. You can also buy a copy of the Space Plan as a full-color poster. It comes in two different sizes. Check it out and more at, again, their website, thespaceplan.com. And that brings me to our program tonight and our guests. I'm happy to bring back to the show Mark Whittington. Mark writes about space matters for Blasting News, and he previously worked for the Houston Space Examiner and Yahoo News, and he's been published in USA Today, the Washington Post, the LA Times, The Hill, the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, the Houston Chronicle. He is the author of Man from Mars, The Asteroid Mining Caper. His alternate history book, Children of Apollo, was recently released as a trilogy, Children of Apollo, The Space Race Gambit, Children of Apollo, The Hard Road to the Stars, and Children of Apollo, The First Woman on the Moon. His most recent book, Why Is It So Hard to Go Back to the Moon, takes a look at and examines the political aspects of a return to the moon that involves both the government and commercial participation, and he also frequently blogs at Curmudgeon's Corner. Mark, welcome back to the Space Show. How are you tonight?
I'm fine. I'm happy to be here.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. So lots of things have been happening in commercial space since you were last on. I mean, more recently, the SpaceX accident, obviously, with Falcon, but Musk is going to live stream his big Mars plans next Tuesday, 1:30 p.m. Central Daylight Time from Guadalajara, Mexico.
I am certainly looking forward to see how he intends to put a person on Mars by 2025.
It'll probably slip a little, don't you think?
Well, I think it, in a way all these things do, whether it's commercial or government.
But he recently tweeted that we should not stop with Mars or only think about Mars, and he rattled off multiple destinations in the solar system that we should also be thinking about visiting and creating places for human life, all the way from Ceres, let's see, moons of Saturn, moons of Jupiter. Venus was mentioned in his tweet. I mean, he listed them all. So, and he had a contest to rename the Mars Colonial Transport Gigantic Rocket.
Yeah, right now he's changed the name to Interplanetary Transport System.
Don't you just love it?
It's somewhat generic, but I think he's come to realize that when you have a heavy lift rocket, you can go to quite a few places fairly easily.
Well, we'll see how he gets his heavy lift rocket.
It's still kind of a name and an object of speculation. Hopefully he'll fill in some details in his Guadalajara talk next week.
What are you hearing about the Falcon 9 accident? Are you hearing anything that's worth talking about?
Well, I mean, they aspire to get back to flight in November, but if they know what's happened, they're not saying anything. The SpaceX team has been analyzing all the data streams that went out when the rocket suddenly spontaneously combusted. And as of right now, they're saying that they have no earthly clue what happened. There's even some weird conspiracy theories about a drone that was deliberately crashed into it. But that's of course, kind of silly.
Yeah, I've been asked to go on some shows and talk about the conspiracy theories, and I'm staying away from it all. I'm not going down that road. I don't know anything other than what I'm reading or hearing in the press, and I just came back from AIAA, and I did talk to a lot of people there. And people who know propulsion have ideas, and they have thoughts, and they have theories. All of them are fairly conventional. You know, nobody's talking about UFOs and drones and this or that.
No. It's very likely some kind of glitch, some kind of confluence of conditions that, just turned the Falcon 9, an expensive Israeli communications satellite, and much of the launch pad into a fireball.
Absolutely. So he's got other investigative partners with that. He's got NASA and the Air Force and the FAA. So I would imagine between all of this brain power, they will figure it out and at some point make a statement about it.
Yeah.
What else is happening with commercial space?
Well, put in your mind the date August the 3rd of this year. If I'm right, August the 3rd is going to be one of those banner dates in the history of space, because that was the date that the United States government officially gave a company called Moon Express official permission to land a rover on the lunar surface. And it was the first time that the Article 6 of the Outer Space Treaty was invoked and was followed through on by any national government. Article 6, for those people who aren't up on space law, states that any signatory government is responsible for any activity on any celestial body, including the moon, by citizens, whether they work for the government or they are a private venture. Well, when Moon Express got their launch contract with Rocket Lab, all of a sudden people started thinking, oh, well, wait a minute, now we have to do something, because there was no procedure in place to actually do that. So the process that they developed was kind of ad hoc and involved people from the FAA, the State Department, NASA, the Air Force. And remarkably, they all came together, and within 4 months, with Moon Express's participation, came up with a document that said, yes, we've examined Moon Express's plan. It satisfies all the criteria of the rest of the treaty, non-interference with other people's space activities, avoiding of contamination of the moon by any kind of biological material, and so on and so forth. And yes, we have now given them leave to fly their mission next year. Now, that process is going to be codified in law probably within about a year. A congressman named, I'm trying to remember, Brindinson?
The one from Oklahoma.
The one from Oklahoma,
right,
is developing legislation that would centralize this process, just like launch mandates. There'll be a mission mandate that the FAA will handle in a single office. But basically that has codified the fact that private companies are not just going to be launching things like they've done, for decades, and now upstart companies like SpaceX are doing, but will they actually be flying missions to other worlds?
So I have a question for you that maybe you can answer, because I don't have a good answer for it, but it does concern me. So we all know how hard it is to build a rocket to do orbital stuff, well, even to do suborbital, given the fate of the suborbital company. But Rocket Labs never launched anything. They never
flown
a rocket, and they're going to launch a payload to the moon, and they're expecting it to work.
I talked to Bob Richards a couple times at Moon Express.
Right. Yeah.
And he indicated to me that Rocket Lab is going to be launching, making several launches before they attempt to launch their payload to the moon. So, I mean, it is a risk.
Well, how many launches did SpaceX do before they could perfect a flight to orbit?
Well,
you know, you had four.
I think they lost three out of four.
On the Falcon 1.
Although on the Falcon 1.
Yeah, and then they lost a couple. The Falcon 9s didn't work right, but I don't think they lost any right up front.
No. I think the Falcon 9 was running pretty smoothly, except for the loss of the rocket during flight several months ago, and then the most recent thing. But they
made it to the wrong orbit and trashed the secondary payload, so that happened as well. But it just seems to me there's an awful big risk there to go with someone to the moon who's never launched anything, maybe an Estes rocket. I mean, seriously, that's a big risk, don't you think?
It is. The folks at Moon Express have been working closely with Rocket Lab, and they've satisfied themselves that the folks at that the company in New Zealand are on the right track. They're not a fly-by-night company, and their engineering is sound. As a matter of fact, the government of New Zealand is passing a space commercialization law within the next week or so that will qualify Rocket Lab's permission to start launching from their launch range in New Zealand.
Well, we'll see. Do you know what their flight date is for Moon Express?
It's late 2017. They didn't have an official date yet. I suspect it depends on how successful the initial launches of Electron is, and probably several issues they're still working on at Moon Express, but they are quite confident that they can, and they have booked, I believe, three launches. It may be four, so they'll be able to try again if, say, the initial launch goes awry.
Electron is the name of their rocket, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But they don't launch. They're not launching from New Zealand. They're gonna. It's also got American roots. That company, so aren't they launching
They are launching from New Zealand initially.
But no, the one to the moon with Moon Express is going from the United States, right?
I don't think so. I would have to double check on that. I seem to remember being told that their initial launches will be from the New Zealand range.
Okay.
I have to mention that there's another, Moon Express, of course, just to keep everybody up to speed, is one of the competitors in the Google Lunar XPRIZE program. Now, the other group that is kind of the front runner is an Israeli team called SpaceIL. They have a launch contract with SpaceX on Falcon 9. You see that they're very likely sweating bullets right now, hoping that SpaceX can get back to flying pretty quick.
Otherwise, they
may not be able to make the end of 2017 deadline.
So this is another Israeli payload. So they don't have a great track record with Israeli payloads.
That's going to be litigated with the insurance company and the lawyers and whatnot. The Israelis have a contract on a Falcon 9, and we can just hope that they're able to get back to flying and launch the thing successfully.
Is anyone else even in the running on Google Lunar X Prize?
Think there's another company that is actually has a launch contract. The name escapes me. There are several other groups that will probably be in the hunt. Team Indus from India. I'm trying to remember the name, the Hakatu group. I may be mispronouncing it, from Japan. And there's a group called Part-Time Scientists from Germany. that all seem to be basically advanced enough that they can they'll actually have something that they can launch.
What about Astro? What's it called?
Astrobotics?
Yeah, Astrobotics.
Astrobotics is probably in the hunt. Now, there's an idea, I think, done by Astrobotics that would have several of the teams share a single launch. And the idea would be is that they all land simultaneously on the moon. And then one of the criteria for winning the Google Lunar X Prize is to move 500 meters. And it would basically be what they would call a NASCAR race on the moon. First rover to get 500 meters wins.
Or they have a rover destruction derby and the last rover standing.
Well,
televise it, make sure we all get to see it.
Well, everybody's going to have their high definition imaging and real time video. So, if they actually pull that off, it should be a fun thing to watch.
Absolutely. Well, I hope someone wins it. It'd be really cool if a private company can get there. But Moon Express so far is the only one with the launch license. And the moon.
They're the ones that I don't think Space IL has gotten the whole mission license yet. And my understanding is they will have to go through the same process that Moon Express did before they can, because they're launching from the Cape Canaveral launch center, or maybe the Kennedy Space Center if they decide to use the
new pad.
The new Pat 39A.
Yeah. Well, there's some exciting stuff happening. What else?
Yeah. The folks at Blue Origin are still busily testing their new Shepard. They have actually succeeded in launching and relaunching the same rocket ship several times. And I believe they are going to test their abort system that they expect is going to trash the rocket, but allow the capsule to land safely. And Jeff Bezos of Blue Origin has just announced that the orbital version of New Shepard will be called New Glenn, and he expects it to be up and running by 2020. Now, the interesting thing about New Glenn is they haven't actually revealed how much it can send to low Earth orbit. However, people who have examined, the thrust of their rocket engines and such, believe that it could take between 50 and 70 metric tons to low Earth orbit, which puts it kind of in between the Falcon Heavy and the Block 1 of the Space Launch System. And with a third stage, it can put 20 metric tons to anywhere in deep space. And even more interesting, Bezos has teased that the rocket after that is going to be called New Armstrong. Now, if New Shepard's a suborbital rocket, New Glenn is an orbital rocket, you can extrapolate that New Armstrong is a moon rocket.
Correct. You would think, at least, right?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, my article in the Wall Street Journal that was published last April, I suggested that there's the real possibility that the next person to land on the moon may be working for a private consortium. This is an idea that I've only started to take seriously within the last year or so. Because you're getting kind of a confluence of, first of all, they're the space miners are starting to get real credibility, and they're being taken seriously, not only in the space community, but in the overall business media. I mean, that's one reason I've been able to publish in Wall Street Journal and Forbes. And by the way, I've provided links to some of those recent articles at Curmudgeon's Corner. Curmudgeon.blogspot.com for anybody who's listening and who's interested. I have a big, long reading list. But anyway, the first, yeah, and just to continue on, the first article that I wrote for Forbes kind of took off from an event that took place during the Republican National Convention that we may all remember, when Eileen Collins, the first woman space shuttle pilot, was given about 15 minutes to expound on space issues. And, you know, she decried that the cancellation of Constellation and proposed that we need to make longer strides and do bigger things in space. And I suggested in that article commercial partnerships. And one interesting way may be that we could go back to the moon quick if NASA used the Space Launch System and the Orion, and we would somehow procure a lander from the private sector. And I threw out a suggestion. I'm not sure if it's entirely practical. You know, Elon Musk is proposing a Mars lander version of the Dragon called the Red Dragon. Maybe, you know, we could also have a lunar Dragon that could put a crew of people on the moon and of course, return them. And, you know, that could be launched on a Falcon Heavy. I'm not sure if it's practical. People with more engineering background than me could confirm it or tell me I'm being ridiculous.
Well, you may find out his interest in that on Tuesday.
Yeah. I mean, if he's going to expound for things more than the moon, I mean, more than Mars, that would be fascinating. Let's see. Well, of course, you know, we've all followed SpaceX's adventures in not only launching things, but landing them. They seem to have gradually got the hang of that so that they actually land the first stage of Falcon 9 back on their little drone ship and then also, next to the launch pad. The next step, of course, is to start a process in which they can refurbish these first stages cheaply and reuse them. But, you know, that as everybody who's seen their live stream video is very impressive. And let's see, another thing, development in commercial space, the government of Luxembourg has invested money in asteroid mining. They started a joint partnership with Planetary Resources. And it's the really first big, investment that company has got. And, you know, Luxembourg has gone in on several similar projects. The idea being is it's a fairly high risk, but it's a really big payoff, as everyone knows. I mean, a single asteroid could have trillions of dollars worth of material in it.
Yeah, but long-term payoff, too.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you probably won't be seeing that sort of thing for quite a while. As a matter of fact, Planetary Resources now has a kind of interim business plan in which they use some of the technology they're building for asteroid prospecting for Earth resource observation. And they intend to sell data to various private firms, governments, and so on Earth resources and whatnot. And that would be one way to keep the lights on while they're developing the asteroid mining thing.
Mark, are you seeing any hint of movement in a human spaceflight commercial movement?
The commercial crew thing.
Well,
that's
NASA.
Along.
Not NASA. I mean, on the commercial side.
Going back to Jeff Bezos, they of course want to do the suborbital hop, or you know, paying a tourist to go experience the flight of a lifetime, go up to about 100 kilometers. See the curvature of the Earth, experience a little bit of weightlessness, and then presumably come down safely. And I've also noticed that Virgin Galactic, at last, has worked through its issues and is starting this testing program again. So there's always hope that they'll have their operation soon, many years after, of course, they had initially planned. But then, you know, it's a kind of a rule for space development projects that it always takes longer and it always costs more than you originally think. Now, the New Glenn, Blue Origin's orbital spacecraft would also take commercial people into low Earth orbit, presumably as part of the space tourism thing. And we also now have two schemes to build private space stations. There's the Bigelow probe idea, which, you know, we've been looking at for quite a while, build inflatables and link them together and outfit them. And there's a new company called Axiom that was just started by a former NASA engineer that wants to use, I think, more rigid modules to cobble together and then do stuff for paying customers.
What's the name of that company again?
Axiom.
A-X-I-O-M?
That's correct.
Okay, I wasn't familiar with that company.
They just started up about a month or two ago. I think, just like Bigelow, they're going to try to do some cooperative stuff with the ISS. Maybe build a module that they'll attach to it. I mean, right now, it's kind of a chicken and the egg thing. You get commercial crew up and going, which is a prerequisite for having private space stations, but you need a market like private space stations for commercial crew to be viable. So they have to kind of develop in tandem.
Right. So are you sort of satisfied that the pace of commercial space and the acceptance of commercial space with NASA and the government is going about as good as could be expected, or would you like to see something more from it?
Well, there's always, you can always do more. Commercial crew was hobbled for a long time because of political ill will developed because of the way that President Obama canceled the Constellation program and then simultaneously ramped up the commercial crew program.
Right.
And, you know, they got shortchanged for a while. I mean, right now, though, the funding situation's been straightened out, but they're going through some technical issues before they can start regular service. In my opinion, yeah, there's always more things that can be done and more incentives that could be done by NASA and probably a lot of other country space agencies as well.
Well, it just goes awfully slow, it seems, but I understand the reasons for it, but it still just seems awfully slow, doesn't it?
Well, you have to remember, you and I were spoiled by Apollo.
Yeah.
We chose to go to the moon in 1961, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind in 1969, 8 years.
From zero,
that turned out to be kind of an anomaly.
Yeah, from not even a starting point, but, you know, lower than a starting point.
Yeah.
So, it did, but we thought it was going to be the routine. And
and you know, just to do a shameless plug, my Children of Apollo, now a trilogy, depicts an alternate history in which the initial Apollo program led to bigger and better things, you know, available at wherever books are sold and in Amazon and Barnes & Noble, for those who are interested in such things, and available for the Kindle and paperback. Anyway, end of shameless plug.
You have an email from Joshua in Denver, and Joshua says, Mark, do you think that the average person, the general public, knows very much about the expanding role of commercial space and cares about it?
I don't think too many people follow it as much as we space aficionados do. It's probably in the back of their mind. And of course, there's always the people that just don't know anything about the world around them, who probably don't even know people are flying in space to begin with. But I think people who are even moderately interested in space know something about the increasing role of commercial companies. I don't think, it's something that everybody knows about. Again, it's not like the Apollo days in which, everybody kind of followed everything because every flight was a major event. Cut into program and follow it.
But we didn't have as many options either. So, we had three TV stations, right?
Yeah, right now, we've got the Science Channel, NASA has its own channel, Discovery Channel,
plus all the nonsense
stuff.
And
of course, the major cable news networks.
Well, yeah, and Dish TV has 800 TV stations or something.
And, of course, video live streaming on the Internet. I have watched a lot of the Falcon 9 missions just
on the Internet.
On my smartphone.
I have too. It just worked out that way.
Yeah, the media has greatly expanded since, Walter Cronkite was telling us about the moon landings.
To say the least. You think the presidential elections, however they turn out, are going to move commercial space one way or the other?
Well, I'll give you my take on that. Going from one candidate to the other, I mean, both candidates have not revealed any of their thinking as far as space or commercial space in general too much, besides the usual plablum, space is great, space is wonderful, and we should do more. Now, one group sent out a questionnaire to the two major candidates and the two minor candidates, and they got back some answers. Hillary Clinton, went into the space is great, space is good. By the way, I once, asked about being an astronaut and was turned down. And by the way, we should go to Mars. Mars is a great idea. Mr. Donald Trump also did some problem about that, though some of his earlier statements are kind of interesting. Last year, on two different occasions, people would come up to him on town halls and ask him about going to Mars. And on both occasions, he said, going to Mars would be great, but really has to wait until we rebuild our infrastructure.
Fill
in potholes, rebuild bridges and whatnot. However, he has also decried Mr. Obama's space policy and has promised to invest more in NASA. So, who knows what he's thinking about. Though, it's also interesting that Newt Gingrich is one of his policy advisors, and Newt Gingrich is a guy who's very interested in space and commercial space. In fact, he was, when he was running for president in his own right in 2012, he proposed the moon base, which unfortunately crashed and burned. But maybe, something like that is being whispered in Mr. Trump's ears. Now, going to the minor party candidates, Gary Johnson gave an answer in which he thought commercial space was great. Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, said, yes, space is great, but I really don't like the private business stuff. I'm a socialist, after all. And the military in space is kind of bad, too.
Okay.
Now, as far as my tea leaf reading, I think if Mrs. Clinton becomes president, we're probably going to have a status quo in which the current program will just kind of continue, maybe with a few tweaks. Mr. Trump may be disruptive, maybe because he has that kind of mindset that he wants to change things and disrupt things. Now, a wrinkle in that is that the United States Senate is going to mark up the most recent NASA authorization bill. Bipartisan, And the NASA authorization bill will basically prohibit any major changes. You know, anybody who's thinking that the new administration, the new Congress, the new administration is going to cancel the Space Launch System because it's too expensive and evil, put that out of your mind.
So wait a minute, Mark. How can they mandate that a future Congress or Senate can't change what a past Congress or Senate has done?
Well, I mean,
that sounds like BS.
Legally, they can't, but this is kind of setting down a marker because the same people are going to be in the next Congress.
Many of them, not all of them.
Well, quite a few of them. Cruz will be there. Bill Nelson will be there. Rubio will be there. Probably. I mean, he's leading his reelection race fairly comfortably. And the idea is that they don't want a reoccurrence of the disruptions that happened when President Obama just up and canceled Constellation without, you know, consulting anybody. Basically, if you want to make changes in the current program, you have to go through us, is what they're saying. Now, there's a lot of wiggle room, of course, because in between, you know, the first two tests of the Space Launch System and the first footprints on Mars, is a gap of, you know, 10 to 15, about 15 years or so. And also part of the bill is that NASA is going to be ordered to re-examine the asteroid redirect mission. That's the scheme in which you would send a probe using a solar electric propulsion system to an asteroid, grab a big boulder off of it, move it to lunar orbit, and then some astronauts in Orion will go and visit it. This program has been criticized in Congress as a waste of time and money. It's been criticized in the scientific community as a waste of time and money. There's a MIT guy named Richard Binzel, one of the leading experts on small bodies like asteroids and comets, who has basically stated that he sees no sense in doing this, that if you want to do asteroids, you should do two things. First, you have to ramp up the whole, you know, searching out for Earth-approaching asteroids with telescopes and probes and whatnot. And if you really want to visit an asteroid, go and visit an asteroid. Put somebody in an Orion, put on a long-term a habitation module, and go to an Earth-approaching asteroid in native orbit, which was the initial plan before NASA decided that they weren't going to be given enough money to do that.
You have a caller on hold. You want to take it?
Sure.
Hello, caller. Welcome to the Space Show tonight. And who are you and where are you? And thank you for your call.
Yeah, this is John in Fort Worth.
My partner in crime with Mox Principal. How you
doing?
Oh,
yeah.
Go, you're on the air. Go.
What
do you think of this proposal from Lockheed Martin? They called the Mars Space Base Camp. I think it's what they're calling it. Which is, we had an interview there. We were out then at the AIAA. Have you heard much about that or?
Was that the one in which you visit the moons of Mars, Phobos and Deimos, kind of stay in Mars orbit?
You stay in Mars orbit above Mars with the astronauts, and they control rovers that go down to the surface of Mars. But the people don't go to Mars.
That might be a good interim expedition. I mean, just like Apollo 8 was a good interim mission before Apollo 11. It will test out, you know, interplanetary travel with people, get you into Mars orbit. I guess the remote control of various rovers in real time would be an interesting exercise. I mean, you know, if you're going to Mars and you're actually setting up a systematic Mars program, that would be a good step to do before you actually attempt a landing.
It's an expensive step.
Well, the whole thing is expensive. Let's not kid ourselves. I mean, even if Elon Musk actually, you know, manages to do it for far less money, which of course what a lot of people are telling you, you know, that there's a lot of people on the internet who have the idea that just because some commercial space guy proposes something that it's going to happen, it's going to be so much better than the stodgy old NASA is going to do, and they may be right, but I'm in the mode of wait and see, you know, see what happens before I make any pronouncement about the probability of success. I mean, you may have the old joke of, you know, NASA finally gets to Mars and Elon Musk is there to greet them.
Or the NASA gets to Mars and there's a burial ground on Mars.
Oh, well yeah. There's always possibility of the first, you know, commercial people, you know, not getting back. I mean, I think, in fact, Musk has admitted that probably people will die in his Mars program before things, you know, proceed a lot further.
Well, we're going to know more about that on Tuesday, and, you know, after we hear his plan.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that with bated breath. I've been waiting for it, you know, since, you know, the stories about the whole Mars transport filtered out.
John, what else is you're on the line? What else?
Yeah. Well, one thing about this so-called space base camp idea, I would think that same sort of vehicle with maybe some additional propellant attached to it could then be used for a manned landing mission at a later time if you developed a lander that could be taken out with it. Or conceivably, I guess the lander could be set out separately with a different rocket launch, you know, which would then put it in Mars orbit and they'd rendezvous out there whichever way they decided to do it. Probably going out with it might be better, but it's because...
Yeah, I think whatever plan that NASA has right now involves assembling the Mars spaceship in lunar orbit. I'm not sure why this is lunar orbit instead of Earth orbit, but I think partly to justify the fact that they're using the Orion, which is right now the only spacecraft designed that can get to lunar orbit, but is I think absurd to take it all the way to Mars and back.
Well, one possibility I think would be that they were saying at the interview, which is on the it was posted on the space show
for Sunday. You know, it's the first
Sunday.
Interview. Yeah, that
essentially that the delta V that it takes to go to the lunar area isn't that much high. It was also a high lunar orbit, not a low one.
Right, I understand that.
Would be not much different than going to geosynchronous or something. Well, they said it's high Earth. They didn't say geosynchronous. But,
yeah.
You know, so that basically it wouldn't be that much more delta V. And I think maybe, this is me, not them, they're hoping to get some advantage as they come back from the lunar orbit to do that slingshot effect where they would thrust the perigee as they come around Earth to go out. That may be what they're thinking about, I don't know, as opposed to just...
Another idea is if NASA decides to be smart and return to the lunar surface before they go to Mars and start refining lunar water as rocket fuel, and then use lunar rocket fuel, which could be launched to where the Mars ship is being assembled. I know that MIT did a study on that. A think tank called Next Gen Space did a similar study on that for NASA. And they concluded that going to Mars would be so much easier and simpler if you didn't have to take all the fuel from the Earth's surface. Of course, the problem is that you also have to make the initial investment to create a lunar infrastructure.
Yes,
but that would make a Mars exploration campaign more sustainable, in my opinion.
No, that would be true. Yeah, if you actually had the investment and developed the lunar propellant infrastructure.
Yeah,
but that would take some time and money also, which
they're not thinking about even landing on Mars until the mid 2030s or late 2030s. So there is time if you want to extend the effort and make the investment. And of course, in my opinion, going back to the moon has a lot of other inherent benefits. Not least, access to its mineral wealth. Good science, of course. It's always good science to be done on the moon. I'd like to see a lunar-based observatory on the far side, which would really open up the universe to observations like, you know, nobody's ever dreamed of before. Some of the lunar people I've talked to believe that the moon is kind of a laboratory for examining how the solar system first formed.
So it's certainly a good idea. I mean, I was not smiling when they canceled Constellation, if that's the question.
No, I think that was kind of ill-considered. I think that the White House had some other alternatives that they could have pursued. They could have done the moon first option that the Augustine Commission did. And also, another interesting fact of space history that was recently published in a web zine called Ars Technica by Eric Berger.
Yeah, by the way...
You know who Eric Berger is.
Just to let everyone know, he will be returning for the second time to the space show on Monday, October... I think is Monday, October 19th, around that time. It's a Monday show.
Yeah, Eric's articles in Ars Technica should be a must-read for anybody who's interested in space. But anyway... He broke some space history recently, concerning the history of the space shuttle. It seems that in the late 70s, NASA discovered, oh no, the space shuttle is over budget and behind schedule, and maybe we won't be able to build a space transportation system, and maybe, you know, at best, it'll be kind of an experimental X rocket that we can just play around with for a while. Well, delegation from NASA went to tell the bad news to President Jimmy Carter. And President Jimmy Carter gave them a response that nobody expected. How much money do you need?
Mm-hmm.
It seems that a few months before, Jimmy Carter had been at a summit meeting with Soviet Premier Leonid Brezhnev, and they were discussing arms control. And Jimmy Carter had told Leonid Brezhnev, you know, without space shuttle coming online, we'll be able to launch satellites that will be able to detect any kind of cheating you Soviets are maybe thinking of doing. So he could hardly let the space shuttle program wither on the vine after telling that to the Soviet leader. So, I mean, it's remarkable. Carter would be the last person you expect to have done something like that, but sure enough, you did.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but definitely he was also arms control oriented, and arms control doesn't work very good unless it's verifiable, so maybe...
That's correct.
So that may be what he was thinking.
Yeah.
Well, at any rate, one last thing on you were discussing earlier, the Falcon 9 explosion.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to go too controversial here, but there is an object in that video that's flying around right before and after it explodes.
I have seen the image. I think it's just a bird.
A bird is a possibility.
The one thing, you see that image after the fireball manifests itself. So it obviously cannot be, I mean, unless you think somebody in the government sent a perfect drone there and fired a hellfire into it for some reason. I mean, I watched that thing in real time. I did not see any indication of anything impacting the launch vehicle. You know, I think this is just one of those things that come up on the internet and people like to talk about because, you know, heck, we all know that everybody lies. You know, the government lies to us. Everybody lies to us. It obviously has to be a hidden explanation for everything.
You really think the government lies to us, Mark?
Oh, Yeah, I mean, hard as it is to believe, I think they do occasionally when they think it's in their best interest. And it's, you know, it doesn't matter which party it is. I mean, sometimes they think that it's for national security. Sometimes it's to protect their own posteriors after a mistake has been made. But, yeah, I mean, it's maybe shocking to some of the listeners, you know. Hold on, you know, we're still a great country. We just, you know, people in government are human beings.
John, anything else from you?
Well, I'll end with this, but ask if he has any new information about this EM drive.
The EM drive. Okay, for people who aren't following the EM drive, the EM drive and a similar device called the Kenai drive are allegedly devices that use microwave energy to create thrust, which, according to our understanding of physics, is impossible. You know, for every reaction, there has to be an opposite reaction, and you can't do this, but they're shooting microwaves through a closed container. Now, there have been some physicists who have looked into some fairly advanced quantum physics and think they might have an explanation as to how these two things will work. For one thing, you know, the EM drive in particular has been tested by multiple people, including the Johnson Space Center's Eagle Works, and they have detected a minute amount of thrust that cannot be explained by experimental error. And the folks at Eagle Works are about to publish a paper in a journal. I think it may be the AIAA journal. I'm not sure. That describes what they've done so far and what they think is happening. Now, a company is also proposing to send a little CubeSat with a Kenai drive into space. And actually, oh my goodness, test the thing in real-world conditions to see if it exhibits thrust in space. Now, you know, this is kind of a low probability but very high benefit thing, because if you had a way to exert thrust without actually having to take propellant, everything changes. You can just attack. I mean, that depends, of course, on whether you can increase the amount of thrust depending upon what kind of energy you put into it. But say you hook this thing up to some solar panels or to a nuclear reactor, you can go anywhere in a much shorter time than anybody previously thought. Now, I'm not prepared to say whether this thing has any real basis in reality or not. I'm just telling you right now, nobody's been able to figure out how this thing works other than it must be producing thrust. So, and the EM drive is going to be also discussed at an upcoming conference. I can't tell you off the top of my head what it is or where it's going to take place, but...
Well, there's a Breakthrough Propulsion Conference in Colorado this week.
That's probably it. Yeah, I think that one is
and,
it.
And Paul March from Eagle Works is there, and Jim Woodward is there, and let's see, I met some other people there. John Brandenburg is there. There are a lot of people going to it. I don't know the name of the conference, but it is this week in Colorado.
I believe that's the one, and... In any case, you know, some of the media are calling it a warp drive. It's not a warp drive. I mean, it's not folding space. Eagle Works does have an idea for that, too, that they're kind of looking at it on desk experiments, but that's kind of far out there and is being financed with pocket change. But the EM drive is more like the Star Trek impulse drive than anything else. It'd still be remarkable. You can still go a lot of places there. I think one study suggested a 3-year round trip visit to Saturn and its moons, which would include, you know, visits to Titan and Enceladus.
pretty cool if it can be created.
If it can be created, but like I said, scientific community doesn't think, most of them anyway, doesn't think this thing has any reality.
You just have to see.
I mean, I think it's worthwhile continuing to experiment with it. I'd be very interested to see how this space experiment works.
My guest yesterday does space science, I'm going to have a senior moment, and it was only yesterday. But we talked about the conservation of momentum and M drive, and he said, look, he says they have been looking for ways other than just with M drive to violate conservation of momentum in our universe. And there's never been a way found to do that. And you have to have a force to have movement. And they just don't see how M drive can do it. And they think it's all going to be an artifact of the experiment. And we had maybe out of a 45 minute, an hour and, let's say an hour and 40 minute or so discussion, probably a good 30 or 40 minutes was on M drive and conservation of momentum. And they just, this is more up John's field, they just don't see how it can be violated because they've been looking for ways to violate it. They said if it was violated with M drive, it would be violated someplace else too, and it's just not. So
I understand that, and they may be right, though. There are a couple of papers that have been published that suggest that it's not really violating conservation of energy. I mean, one suggested, it's fairly advanced physics, but there's one suggestion that it was really creating streams of photons that can create minute thrust. And then there was another one that, it goes beyond my college freshman,
physics,
core physics course that I took many decades ago.
Well, John, when you get a chance, listen to Paul's talk yesterday and see what you think about his comments toward M drive. It's toward the end of the show.
Okay, I'll be listening to that then, because that's another interesting topic, just like the Woodward stuff is. I'm pretty sure we're not talking about momentum. Conservation violation. If it's working, in some way that somehow doesn't do that, and the question is, how would that be,
Or what is the force that's being exerted that we don't know about?
Yeah, something has to be. Because the trouble is, conservation of momentum is such a fundamental thing, and we've discovered elementary particles because momentum is missing, and so they postulate the particle, like the neutrino, that would conserve momentum, and then guess what? They find the particle 20 years later in the experiment. I doubt that's what's happening. But Woodward thinks that it can exist with known physics, but that's way too off to get into here. If you want to get into that, I guess you could listen to that thing we have on Sunday, but,
All right, anything else for Mark?
I'll close for now and let some other people call in.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Callers, the line is available if you would like to use it. And, our toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. And we're way beyond our break point, Mark, so I'm going to pause this for a couple of minutes. And listeners,
okay, let's give me a time to do a bathroom break real quick.
We'll be back, listeners, and we'll take more of your emails and hopefully some more of your calls. So don't go
anywhere. Okay, I'll be back in just a second.
This is with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
The mission of the Space Show is to promote future economic opportunities, scientific discoveries, and medical advances for all humankind through peaceful and cooperative ventures in outer space. The Space Show intends to be the forum by which space exploration becomes an integral part of our culture, our economy, our country, our world, and our global vision, in which all nations unite in creating a thriving future through the enormous potentials afforded by off-Earth opportunities. The Space Show is committed to advancing integrity and responsibility, both in our off-Earth conduct and in the potential long-range consequences of our actions in space. The Space Show wants to make the dreams of space today the realities of tomorrow.
And welcome back, everybody. And we are in the second part of the Space Show program. And our guest tonight, and the person who's been leading our discussion, is Mark Whittington. We do have a couple of sponsors for the second part of our program. So AIAA is a sponsor. This is the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics. They have five conferences each year. They now call them forums: SciTech, Defense, Aviation, Propulsion and Energy, and Space. And I was just at the one, Space 2016, which was in Long Beach. And they bring together like-minded aerospace pros across industry, academia, and government for a blend of engaging plenary sessions, in-depth Forum 360 programs, robust technical programming, and networking opportunities, all of which jumpstart dialogues, discoveries, collaborations, and careers. AIAA's members help make the world safer, more connected, and more accessible, and more prosperous. Their website, AIAA.org, for more information and membership information. Celestis is also a sponsor. They are the premier space memorial service. Their spot is known as Celestis in pop culture. Celestis is widely known for its unique memorial spaceflight services. As a result, they have often been featured in popular culture. Major media outlets around the world covered the first Celestis memorial spaceflight in 1997, which included pop culture icon Timothy Leary and Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry. The New Yorker magazine published a cartoon after the launch. The flight was recorded in the Guinness Book of World Records and was even added to the popular board game Trivial Pursuit. Noted personalities from U.S. Senator John Glenn to actress Susan Sarandon have recommended Celestis to friends and constituents. Actors including Jonathan Frakes, Patrick Stewart, and Tom Hanks have announced their own interest in a space funeral. Star Trek's James Doohan and Gene and Majel Roddenberry will fly on a Celestis deep space mission, and Celestis has been featured in movies, popular music, and the game show To Tell the Truth. So check them out, Celestis.com, Celestis.org. Mark, you mentioned before we started the program about a new film that is coming out in January.
The film, which is based on a book that was just published, is called Hidden Figures. And it's a story from the early part of the United States space program and concerns the experiences of three African-American math geniuses who were instrumental in developing our spaceflight capabilities back in the early 60s. One of them, for instance, was described as equivalent to a Stephen Hawking or an Albert Einstein in her ability to not only do the math, but to understand the math in a kind of instinctual way. The story of these people have never been told before. I mean, I think partly because, you know, some of the people who were not astronauts or major flight controllers haven't been told, but I mean, you know, let's be honest, women, minorities, marginalized people back in the early 60s. And as a matter of fact, according to what I've been able to find out about the movie, of course, part of their career at NASA took place at Langley in Virginia, during Jim Crow, in which their section was segregated from everyone else. And they actually had to use their own bathroom. You know, fortunately, that nonsense was done away with the Civil Rights Act of 1964. But it's something that I find fascinating, because one of the things that, that people who are as old as I am, and as David is, or you know, are up on space history, is that the space program and the civil rights movement has had a really contentious relationship. There was actually a protest that took place at the launch of Apollo 11, led by Martin Luther King's successor, the Reverend Ralph Abernathy, upon the premise that the money being spent to go to the moon should have been spent on solving poverty, crime, education, and so on. And, you know, it was a cry taken up by certain politicians and whatnot, and I think was instrumental in ending the Apollo program when it did. But here, we have the, you know, we have these ladies, these African-American ladies who were empowered by their participation in the space program, that they won respect from people like John Glenn, because they calculated, they made the equations that enabled him to go to orbit and to come back. He also worked on the trajectories to take men to the moon and to land people on the moon.
Do you know if the three women are still alive?
I believe at least one of them is. Maybe all three of them. I would just kind of Google hidden figures, and there have been some newspaper articles about the women as they are now, because they were fairly young way back then. I mean, fresh out of college, practically.
Yeah.
And, of course, one of the interesting aspects is, you know, the 60s were what they were, but NASA really needed people with expertise in a lot of things, and they were not too finicky about what your color was or what your gender was. Even though, of course, you know, they were still the aspect of discrimination.
Now, you could also...
You had to work twice as hard to get half the recognition.
You could also smoke in the control room. You know, I've
well, heard. Yes. I mean, it was the era of Mad Men. You smoked in the control room.
And it was pretty smoke-filled from what I've heard from interviewing people about those days.
Yeah, well, we all saw the movie Apollo 13 with the ashtrays inside of each control consoles. It was a different era.
To say the least, to say the
least. But I find it great that the story of people like that is being told, and I hope other stories are going to be told on TV and on cinema and whatnot, and it will really change your understanding about what the early space program was like and how it affected people besides just the astronauts and you know, the top managers and flight controllers and engineers.
And the movie comes out in January, you told me, and stars Kevin Costner.
That's correct, middle of January. There'll be a preview, I think, probably in New York and Los Angeles on Christmas Day, that goes wide in January.
And you said it stars Kevin Costner.
It stars the actresses who play the three ladies involved, but Kevin Costner has a role in it as the NASA administrator. And Jim Parsons, who we all know as Sheldon Cooper from the Big Bang Theory, is an engineer in the movie as well.
We get to see,
you know, Jim Parsons play a slightly different role than his most famous one.
So this is a movie we'll all be looking out for. Do you know who the author of the book was?
I cannot tell you off the top of my head. Just Google hidden figures. You'll be able to find that out.
I'd like to get that author on the space show.
I expect that she would be, I believe it's a female, and I believe she would be a good person to talk about.
I'm going to see if I can find her while you're talking. You don't know her, I take it then.
I have never met her. I mean, I just came upon this on the internet, and it kind of blew me away.
Okay, so the trailer is out. It's a Fox.
The trailer is out. You can Google the trailer. As a matter of fact, one of the articles I've linked on my reading list on curmudgeons.com is an article about the trailer. So, you know, you can just go to the article and the trailer is embedded in there. Or you can just look for the trailer by itself. It's on YouTube.
Okay, so it comes out on January 13th?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Music is Hans Zimmer. He's done a lot of good music for movies.
Oh, yeah.
You can get a lot of information about it already. It's already out there. And here's the book, Hidden Figures, The American Dream and the Untold Story of the... I'm waiting for it to appear. and the untold story of the black women, and that's what it's about. And my web browser. Well, anyway, it's $7.59. It's not an expensive book.
No.
Okay. So
that might be the Kindle version.
I don't know. It's written by Margot Lee Shetterly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in children's math books. Maybe no, this is the right one because it has their picture on the cover back in NASA.
Yeah, it may be a young adult book then. I'm not sure, or maybe that's just the publisher.
This is the amazing true story of the four American female mathematicians African American female mathematicians at NASA who helped achieve some of the greatest moments in our space program. Coming out as a major motion picture. And as I said, it's Margot Lee Shetterly. I'm not familiar with her as an author, but she has other books.
I've never heard of her before, but I think she's going to be famous.
She has other books out.
Yeah, I imagine she does.
So, I'm going to... Listeners, if any of you know her... you know, it'd be great to... Well, yeah, hardcover is $18, okay?
Yeah.
It would be great to get her on the space show. So, if...
I would contact her publisher, see if you can get to her that way, or maybe she has an agent.
Maybe she has a website.
Oh, probably does.
You know, if she's anybody and anyone today, right? They have to...
Yeah.
They have to have a website. Here, Margot Lee Shetterly. Shelterly, Twitter, yeah, research writer. I think she does have a website. We're taking up your time, but
no, that's fine.
So this must be her. Hidden Figures.
These ladies were called computers.
Pre-order later.
Before the you know the electronic computers became big, computers were math whizzes. Who would write calculations on paper. The Manhattan Project had a whole section of women and some men who wrote out the calculations that were needed to make the atomic bomb. And then the early NASA had the same situation.
So she says for media, contact X person at HarperCollins. Then she has a speaking agency. Boy, she's got like 25 different agencies representing every aspect of her life.
Yeah.
So she'd probably be pretty hard to... For all other inquiries or to contact me directly, use the form. I'll use the form.
Yeah.
And, I will send her a note and see if she's interested in... coming on the space show to talking about her book and upcoming film.
Yeah, just mention that your audience tends to be people who are very interested in all things aerospace, including history.
And I'll tell her we talked extensively about it during your program.
Yeah.
All right. So that's coming up. That'll be a nice New Year's present for space people to see. What else? We've had some
interesting events in the planetary science area.
Yeah, amazing stuff going on there.
The most impressive to me, of course, was last year's flyby of the New Horizons to Pluto. And Pluto has become, has transformed from a little dot in the sky that was discovered, you know, in the 1930s to a very strange world that people had never imagined. I mean, we have icebergs floating on glaciers of liquid nitrogen. And I mean, we just discovered the other day that Pluto spews methane and paints Charon, its largest moon, red, and that's why they have a red spot. And you have these ridges and grooves and mountain ranges, and believe me, that should be a prime target for a big scale planetary mission to land something on there, or at least orbit it, fairly soon. Mars Curiosity is still rolling around, discovering strange new things, sending back great pictures of Mars. Juno just went into a big elliptical orbit of Jupiter, and you know, its primary mission is to kind of dip into its heavy radiation zone and do observations of the planet itself. The previous probe that was in Jupiter orbit, Galileo, mainly concentrated on the moons like Europa. Oh, and speaking of Europa, I believe next week there's going to be a big announcement about Europa concerning observations of that moon by the Hubble Space Telescope. And, you know, the whole business of all these worlds are yours except this one are being joked about on social media. People are wondering what exactly that particular announcement is going to be. Now Eric Berger is telling people it's probably they found geysers of water shooting up from underneath the ice cap from the subsurface ocean that you think resides there that might contain life, because tidal forces has caused it to be a fairly warm water ocean. And that, I think, is particularly going to drive the big Europa mission that has suddenly become a big a priority. It's going to use the big space launch system, but both a lander and I think it's kind of a semi-orbiter. The orbiter is going to orbit Jupiter, but it will be designed, it will fly by Europa many multiple times, because apparently that's easier than trying to put something into orbit around that world.
Absolutely. So I've talked to some of my friends at AIAA who are close to the Europa mission, but I couldn't get any information.
Yeah, well, you see, the driving force behind Europa happens to be my congressman, John Culbertson, who's you know, he's a congressman from Houston, so of course he has to be interested in space. But his interest also seems to be genuine. It's, you know, not just related to where his district is, which is why he's pushing Europa, which will be primarily a JPL show.
But Sheila Jackson Lee is also from Houston.
Yes, she is, and she more or less supports space. Of course, her district, I don't think, has a lot of aerospace workers in it. It's mainly an inner-city district, a lot of minority voters. It's one of the ones, in fact, it was carved out to be a minority-majority district. But she will give lip service to things space once in a while.
It's going to be a long time before we get to Europa, Mark.
Middle of the 2020s, most likely. I mean, who knows?
And politics,
sorts of things can happen between then and now.
Yeah, and it requires it doesn't require SLS, but it's 9 years or so faster with SLS.
That's correct. Okay, you can go get there directly. None of the gravity assist maneuvers.
So it gets there a lot quicker, assuming that we're able to keep SLS going. I know a lot of people hate it and would like to see it defunded.
Well, I think that that ship has sailed. That rocket has launched the bending metal on it. And plus the fact, as I mentioned before earlier in this program,
yeah, they got a poison
Congress
pill.
Is not in the mood to put up with any abrupt changes when the new president comes in. And they've served notice, and I think even if a new president, whoever that person may be, might be interested in, they're going to have bigger things to think about as far as spending political capital. A whole host of issues that don't involve space, so they might decide to take Congress's lead on this, or be sensible and actually take members of Congress into their confidence and work out something together.
Oh, my God. How dare you suggest such a thing?
Well, in my latest Facebook, Why Is It So Hard to Go Back to the Moon, that's one of the chapters that I discuss, that one of the mistakes that some presidents have made is that they make a big pronouncement about space. George H.W. Bush did it with the Space Exploration Initiative. He didn't take Congress into his confidence. It just appeared during the 20th anniversary of the moon landing, and a lot of members of Congress that were going, what? And as a result, that went nowhere. President Obama sprung the cancellation of Constellation out of the blue in his budget proposal. There wasn't even an official announcement. People just noticed, wait a minute, there's something missing in the 2010 budget. This is not going. This is not right. This is not correct. Now George W. Bush did it right. He spent about a year between the Columbia accident and his announcement, consulting with people in Congress, a lot of people on staff, a lot of people at NASA, to work out his vision for space exploration. And that actually had a little bit of traction. It was, you know, ran into trouble for various reasons. It was not funded as much as it should be. And there were the usual technical problems. And now with the growth of social media, everybody, you know, who even, you know, heard about rockets can be their own space expert and can snipe at it and argue about it and offer up alternatives that they're pretty sure will work better. And some of them might, you know, I mean, if I wanted to design a space exploration program from the beginning, I might do things differently. I also happen to know that the great can be the enemy of the just good enough. And if you just continue to squabble about this, you're going nowhere. You have to decide on a path. And yes, there'll be people saying it's the wrong path, but it's a path, and you can make it work.
So true, but the behavior of Congress is beyond the expertise of this program.
Politics is called a science. I'm not sure that's true. It's more like an art, maybe an arcane art. Maybe something of people only who are only, you know, know magic can do correctly. But
let me take you in this direction for the remaining minutes of the show. What should we be looking forward to? We're coming up on the last quarter of 2016. What should we focus on here, in your opinion?
Well, let's see. A lot of course, we have as far as space goes. Let's see. We have to see, of course, you know, when Falcon 9 is going to return to flight. We should hopefully find out about that pretty soon, and hopefully it will be sooner rather than later. I mean, if they're months trying to retool, a lot of things are going to be disrupted. I also have to mention OSIRIS-REx left the planet. I think earlier this month, headed to the asteroid Bennu to collect a sample and then, you know, first of
bring
all, examine the rock, collect the sample, and then return. So that is something that just happened. It is fascinating because the asteroid Bennu has some supposedly some organic material on it, and sometimes scientists speculated that life arose on this planet when comets and asteroids containing organic material collided with the young Earth, and the organic material coalesced and started to evolve, and now we're all here talking about space matters on a planet of 7 billion people. Now, let's see. As far as other things, we should there's, of course, the usual end of the fiscal year budget politics taking place. It's going to be a temporary continuing resolution, and I think that the main appropriations bills or probably an omnibus spending bill will pass during the lame duck session of Congress after the election. So we'll figure out how much NASA's going to get, how much other agencies that have to do with space are going to get, whether or not there's going to be a NASA authorization bill or not, and what's going to be contained in it. The markup for the Senate version is tomorrow. Well, as far as space missions go, one thing we shouldn't not neglect, the Chinese have just launched the Tiangong 2 heavenly power space module, and their first crew is going up next month, the Shenzhou, whatever the number the Shenzhou is, and they're going to do a lot of good experiments, and this will lead up to their big space station that they plan to have operational in 2022.
They're moving ahead, and I think they are a force to keep your eye on.
Oh, absolutely. They're doing it the slow, methodical way, doing things, learning from them, doing the next step, and going so on and so forth.
Right. Could be a very interesting and busy quarter, but, you know, a lot depends on Musk. And I, you know, Mark, I think that if he really does make his Mars announcement on Tuesday as planned, that's going to take up the press energy for multiple weeks in the space.
I think so. You're probably right, because
everyone's going to be on
people
that.
People are going to, first of all, wondering, why are you talking about Mars when you haven't...
You can't get off of Earth.
You get off of Earth, and you really need to get that commercial crew running. Otherwise, if you're not going to Mars, you may not have a company.
Eric Berger really eloquently stated this a couple of weeks ago after the accident.
Like I said, everybody needs to read Mr. Berger.
Absolutely. He's got really great insights, even if you're not happy with what he may say.
I don't agree with everything he writes, but everything he writes is well considered and well thought out.
Absolutely. He's top notch. There's no doubt about it. And you want to hear him when he comes on the show, for sure. But I think Musk is going to take up all the energy in the room for multiple weeks with his Mars announcement once he makes it.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be people who will be arguing, well, why are we even allowing NASA to do this if Musk is going to be there in 9 years?
Right. And
I'm saying, yeah. And, of course, there might be the idea of maybe doing a merger between NASA's journey to Mars and Musk's Mars.
I can't see Musk buying the NASA journey to Mars.
Maybe in the back of his mind is that NASA will outsource.
And pay him and do it as a contract. That I could see happening, but his goals and his ideas for going to Mars and the risk that he believes they're willing to take as compared to what the government's willing to take, I think in a way they do share technology. I know that because I've heard that from JPL people and others, but on the other hand, I think they're on different pages.
Yeah, you're probably right, and they have different methodologies.
And he really does want a spaceship to move. He wants Moonraker to go to Mars. I mean, he wants 100 people. He hasn't talked about breeding stock for those 100 people, but you know, he wants 100 people to go there, and maybe they'll all be young hotties, you know, breeding stock, just like in Moonraker, you know.
Well, I would imagine if you're thinking of a colony, you're going to have people who will pair off and start making babies.
Assuming you can do that in microgravity and that environment.
Well, on Mars gravity, you know, one-third gravity, speaking of which, there's going to be a movie kind of covering that, another movie coming.
Called Gravity that. Boy?
It's called The Space Between Us.
Okay.
It's about the first boy to be born on Mars.
That's the one I'm talking about. So I saw the trailer and read the reviews of it, and I thought, God, I'll never go see this. Even if it comes out for free on Netflix, I probably wouldn't go see it.
Well, it's an interesting idea because it covers the idea of somebody who was born and raised in one-third gravity coming to Earth and the difficulties he experiences. I mean, genetically, he is, you know, made for Earth gravity. However,
practically, he's lived on Mars.
It's three times what he's used to.
Yeah, he's lived on Mars all his life.
Yeah, and of course, he is... It's kind of like Stranger in a Strange Land. You know, he's a human born and raised on Mars, seeing his home planet for the first time. And you got to think that all those colors and all those people and sensory experiences are just going to be overwhelming. I mean, it may be worth seeing just for that. I mean, you know, it's obviously a young adult kind of, you know, puppy love romance type of thing. But we'll see.
We'll see. That's not high on my radar. But
yeah.
But the other one with the hidden figure sounds like a really great movie.
I think so. I definitely intend to see that.
We're coming up close to quitting time. Anything you want us to hold on to or remember, or any salient closing comments you want to leave us for tonight, or anything we've missed?
Well, let's see. We've covered quite a bit. If you want to find out more of my thinking, I posted some links to some recent articles on my blog, curmudgeons.com, curmudgeon.blogspot.com. That includes links to some of my books that are on Amazon. The articles, of course, are free to read. A lot of the stuff I do on Blasting News is current stuff. Everything from Juno to the EM drive to the more recent events having to do with aerospace. You can follow me. I do other stuff on Blasting News too, but a lot of it is space related. My books, Why Is It So Hard to Go Back to the Moon? The Man from Mars, the asteroid mining caper. The Last Moonwalker and Other Stories, and of course the Children of Apollo trilogy. You know, take a look at those. They're both out in paperback and Kindle. The Kindle versions are fairly cheap. You know, I can always use the scratch, and I think each of those books will be entertaining and enlightening to anybody who picks up a copy. See, the last time we were talking, I had just come out with Why Is It So Hard to Go Back to the Moon. One thing you might want to do, since it covers the political dimension of large space projects like going back to the moon, get a copy, send it to your favorite political candidate. You know, send many copies. You know, that in itself would be a statement. We'll see.
Okay. Keep me posted, and we'll talk soon, okay?
Okay, splendid.
I appreciate your coming back on, listeners. That's it for today, so we're back live on Friday and on Sunday. And Doug Messier is the Hotel Mars guest tomorrow. John Batchelor wants to talk to him about SpaceX, so we'll see what Doug has to say. I spent a lot of time with Doug at AIAA.
Yeah.
And so we'll see what he has to offer with Parabolic Arc on anything new at SpaceX.
Yeah.
So, Mark, thank you again for being a guest on the show. Listeners, thank you for participating. And everybody have a great rest of the week. Do keep looking up. Good night from Mark and myself and the Space Show.
It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you, Mark.